Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we got news and sports coming at the top, so that's up first. I have a very interesting philosophical walk down memory lane. I think you guys will be interested, probably thinking about it yourself when you hear about it. First, I'll tell you about Pure Talk USA. Are you with AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile? Pure Talk USA uses the exact same network as they do. Same tower, same coverage, but literally half the cost. I'm a customer. I kept my phone. They sent me a SIM card. I get the same service as before for half the money. Unlimited talk, text, and 2 gigs of data. Just $20 a month. Average person saves $400 a year. Why cheaper? Well, that's what I said. Why is it cheaper? Well, no retail stores or billion-dollar ad campaigns, and you only pay for the data you need. U.S.-based customer service. The CEO is a veteran. Grab your phone, dial #250, say keyword Adam Carolla to save $250 off any iPhone, including the new iPhone SE. That's #250 and say Adam Carolla.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Bill O'Reilly. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Jeff Cesario with the sports. And now, Patriot, not a pinhead, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No judgment. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing with a friend. Hit that little share button on your phone. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
YOLO, man.
YOLO. All right. I'm going to ask you guys a philosophical question that I talked to Dr. Drew about the other day. And it brought me back to a place, a horrible, lonely, weird, sad place. And it did the same for Dr. Drew, and he was like starting to get the heebie-jeebies when I was talking about this thing, because I realized, you know, I've been watching the bejesus out of the Love Boat, and
oh, have you?
Yes. And every single episode,
we can work on Dawson's intro,
so
so it's established.
Every single episode has the same story arc, which is the boy meets the girl. But then there's some confusion. It's always the thing where it's like, oh, she's high society and I'm a transmission mechanic. And if she found out I was a transmission mechanic, she wouldn't really love me. So then he says he's an international financier, right? And then she does like him. And then later on, she finds out. And then she's not angry because he's a transmission mechanic. She's angry because he lied.
Right. And the story is old as time.
Right.
Titanic was the biggest movie in the world.
Right.
But let's talk about, that's another kind of Love Boat.
That is every single A, B, and C story on Love Boat. And then at some point, the person, man or woman, goes out to the railing of the ship and leans over the railing of the ship at night. They're wearing their tuxedo or right. their evening gown, and they're standing out there just gazing off into the distance.
Contemplating,
melancholy, sad, trying to make sense of their life. And the average time they spend contemplating at that railing is 4.7 seconds before the person they were formerly in love with walks up to them and goes, hey, is there room on this railing for another passenger?
On and a 2,000-person vessel, that right. person just happens to be there.
They look at him every time, and then they both say, I have something I need to say. And then they go, you go first. And
yeah,
then they
you first. Are,
and then they both apologize simultaneously, and then they fall into each other's arms. Now, the railing will work for relationships, like love relationships. Also, if there's a situation where the young teenage daughter who wants her freedom has a blowout with her overbearing widower dad, you know, who doesn't want her dating the young boys, she'll go crying and she'll hang out at the railing for 4.7 seconds. And then the dad will come walking up and they'll have a heart to heart. They'll hug it out and they'll go to commercial break. I realized that the motif, the blueprint for every single show I saw growing up, whether it was the Love Boat, you go out to the railing and then the person immediately understands they've done wrong, or they want to repair this relationship, or they were truly in love and it was foolish of them to react that way at dinner. They immediately just go out to this railing and meet the person, and they patch it up in 18 seconds. Right. And again, they patch up every kind of relationship. If the captain is arguing with young Vicky, his daughter, he'll go to the railing and she'll walk up, or she'll go to the railing and he'll walk up moments later.
It's the come to Jesus railing.
Right.
The healing power of the railing.
Yes. And it also worked that way in any family drama or sitcom where the person would go, "Pa, I'm angry at you." And they'd go into their little house on the prairie. They'd go in their bedroom and just like slam the door. And then moments later, the dad would come in and sit on the edge of the bed. It was a universal answer for everything all the time. You got into a blowout. You're having a relationship, whatever that thing. You know, you wanted a mini bike really bad, and their family said no. And then at some point, you go into your room and you'd sit on top of your bed like Jan Brady, and you'd like pout, and you'd pout for 4.7 seconds, and then Mr. Brady would come in and go, "We've decided to get you that mini bike after all." It solved every problem. You just go to your place and you pout. And I realized, since that was the construct of almost every TV show and movie I saw growing up, you just have to go somewhere, look a direction off toward Mecca, and that person would walk into this space and then give you the news that you wanted. Either they loved you, or their mom and dad weren't getting a divorce, or you're going to get that mini bike after all, or you could sign up for Cub Scouts, or whatever it was. It was all solved. And so, yes.
Is that where you learned your technique for getting back into Pop Warner football after you just look out of your shoulder and you gave your parents the silent treatment for 2 weeks?
Yes. It took 2 weeks.
That's the guy who you did.
And I physically wouldn't speak to them, which was different. Because exactly. So I went in my room.
It took him a week and a half to notice.
I realized I had that burned into my psyche. So, like, when I was young, you know, I'm going to go in my room and sit on my bed and be angry and pout. But no one ever came into my room. No one ever showed up. No one sat at the foot of the bed. We never patched anything up. No one ever even knocked on the door. It never happened. And I can remember like being in high school and being like 16 and really liking this girl. And we had a dust up and whatever. But I really liked her. And then I'm just going to go sit home and pout on Friday night. But the phone never rang and no one ever knocked on the door. And I remember having this thing where it's like, at some point, someone's going to knock on the door and go, "I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I love you, or here's your mini bike," or whatever it was. And it just never happened. It never happened with my parents once. It never happened with any girl. Later on, you know, when I was like 22, my girlfriend dumped me and I was distraught. And I'd be sitting home in my apartment on a Saturday night. Like, at some point, there's going to be a knock on the door. I even constructed a railing and put a scrim of the Pacific Ocean off into the distance.
A fan blowing.
So I could just lean against it looking forlorn in my apartment. No one ever walked up to that railing. And I'm trying to think, did everyone have that life? Were you guys expecting that? It was such a strong theme in every show I ever saw. But it never happened to me once. Every chick that dumped me fucking took it to the grave. When my dad said no mini bikes, he fucking meant no mini bikes. There was never any circling back. There was never any presentation of like, "Son, I want you to come out to the driveway. You see that mini bike with the bow on it? We changed our mind." It never happened. It never with anything. It was like, "Hey, can I do this?" "No." "Okay, done." Done. It was never, nothing ever came back. No one ever knocked on the door. No one came to the railing. No girlfriend ever called and said, "I've really been thinking about this." Am I alone in this experience? Is this everyone's life? And what were they doing with this fucking railing? And why isn't there a class action lawsuit?
Gina, if I can jump in, I'll throw out a theory. I wonder, Adam, if this is like a young man thing where guys aren't, you know, brought up to really, well, weren't brought up to really be in touch with their emotions. So I do that all the time where it's like, I don't get my way, quote unquote, which means the girl or whatever, or, you know, whatever the trauma was in my 14-year-old life, I plop myself in my bed and just kind of, you know, pout it out. And I wonder if that's just guys, young men, not being in, like, being able to process what should be just kind of a fleeting emotion, like, oh, that sucks, moving on. But if to us, it's like hormones and everything, and we're just, you know, all wrapped up in our own shit.
Well, I think for me, it was seeing so many depictions of it. I mean, it was just literally every episode had the person's there was a rooftop deck version of this where they'd go up to the roof and they'd just be looking over the city, and at some point a hand would come onto their shoulder. Has anyone ever walked up behind you and apologized? No one's ever snuck up on me and apologized. My options are like, I can kick a hole in the drywall, or I can beat off and then kick a hole in the drywall. Those are my two options. There's not a third option where the person walks up and puts their hand on my shoulder and go, hey, Adam, I've been thinking.
I think this is very gender specific, because when you were saying all this, I was like, the amount of times there's been a knock at my bedroom door, or I've gone into another room and a boyfriend or a fiance or whoever has come in to say, you know, let's talk this out. I think women do that and expect a follow up, but I don't necessarily think men do it and get a follow up.
I get no follow-up.
I think it's a very feminine scenario, because
the finisher is saying, I interrupted you, sorry.
Well, no, it's just the same. If I was upset as a kid and I went into my room, then, you know, eventually my mom would come in or my dad would come in, you know, and we'd hash it out. But it's same, bad relationships. And trust me, there's a lot of things that make a bad relationship a bad relationship. But one of them was, you know, a guy being maybe say verbally abusive or kind of just a dick. And then me being like, I got to extricate myself from the situation, going to another room. And there was no follow-up. So then I'd have to go back and go, I'm sorry. I just need this bubble to pop. I need this to end. In good relationships and with women, women are used to being followed into another room, I think. Go ahead, Brian.
What Adam's talking about is impotent rage. And I think that's a hallmark of the teenager or the young man. You know what I mean? 14 to 25.
Yeah, it's funny. I never had it with any of my immediate family either. I always had this sort of thing that I could almost... I could beg and beg and beg. If I begged long enough for a Honda XR75 trail bike, like eventually at some point I'd just wake up Christmas morning and it would be there. Like somehow this thing would manifest itself. And it was always like, your stepdad got you $10 and then your parent grandparents gave you $10. So if you can buy a $1,100 Honda XR75 for $20, then you may have. You could buy one knobby from one tire for that. But I was telling this to Dr. Drew, and Dr. Drew was starting to get uncomfortable because he was putting himself back in those days when he was sitting in his room just longing for that phone to ring or the knock on the door, and it just never came.
You want to take action, or you want action to happen, either on your behalf or something to happen, but nothing happens, and it makes your rage like kind of that much more condensed.
Yes.
And you don't even get the indirect knock on the door because, again, I'm just thinking of this from a girl's perspective. If I wanted a boy to call and he didn't call and I was so upset, I'd flop myself on the bed and cry. Well, my mom would come in and console me. You know, you guys didn't have even an indirect consolation.
Nobody
stood with a boombox.
Your mom came to my room a couple times, but in general,
did she?
Yeah, her score is actually higher than my mom's. She'd actually flew in from KC. And
that's very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I was just thinking about, I just kept seeing everyone going to the railing and longing, and the person would immediately just slide. I mean, they were so close. They could have bump drafted them down the fucking Lido deck. Like, I mean, they literally could have turned around and seen them walking behind them. They were that far off.
Yeah. That was the other thought that I had and forgot to articulate was So, like, I haven't watched that many sitcoms, especially ones from back in the day, but wasn't it a rule, basically, an unwritten rule, basically, for decades that the sitcom had to either resolve itself or there had to be some redemption within those 22 minutes? You know what I mean? Whatever conflict there was,
of course,
it got wrapped up in those 22 minutes. And I wonder if that poisoned a generation, two generations of kids who would watch the sitcoms and be like, oh, well, this is unfortunate, this conflict I'm having right now, but it'll wrap itself up in 22 minutes.
Before the next commercial break.
Yeah. Like you were subliminally trained for things to resolve or have a redemption. And that's not how life works.
I was trained that if you just stared off into the horizon, that someone would walk up behind you and give you the answer that you wanted for something. Or if you went in your room and slammed the door and sat on your bed and pouted, someone would knock on the door and give you that. I never got that on the railing of the Princess cruise, and I never got it at home either. I don't think I get it now either. Maybe it doesn't exist. I don't think it exists.
Paying it forward, how many railing moments do you have with your daughter or your son?
Not many.
Room on that bed for one more, champ?
Never happened. All right. Well, that was my go to the railing and pout moment that has been. I rolled snake eyes on that bad boy. I had some thoughts. I was thinking, I was driving down Sunset Boulevard. I saw up on the Comedy Store, they had a George Floyd sort of memorial. And then the Laugh Factory had a big George Floyd picture. The Comedy Store has a RIP, and the Laugh Factory has a picture of him.
A banner.
And a rest in peace and banners and stuff like that. And I started thinking, about some of the signs I've seen businesses like Black Lives Matters and stuff like that, you know, spray painted on the boarded up, whatever. And I thought, all right, I'm assuming these people are a little less down with the movement, a little more trying not to get their liquor store broken into. I'm assuming, or somebody throw a Molotov cocktail through the window. I don't want to be cynical, but I've seen too much of it to believe that I don't think they're all down with the cause.
And the two businesses you highlighted happen to be in very highly trafficked areas that you could certainly see a mob going down or protesters going down.
So it's funny because I thought about in 50 years we'll all be chicks, and I thought about, wait a minute, I had a small chapter or a page on what to put in the window of your house, because I'm also seeing there's a sign that everyone puts in the window of their house, which has a, I think it's the decree is science is science and maybe Black Lives Matter and no one is illegal. There's a sign. They're doing lawn signs. They're doing
in
windows.
This house, we believe Black Lives Matter. Women's rights are human rights. No human is illegal. Science is real. Love is love. Kindness is everything.
Right.
Really drive the point home. All the different lines are in the rainbow colors.
Right. And so they're kind of saying, hey, man, don't if you're thinking about throwing a brick through a window, don't do our window. We're on your side. Mm-hmm. And I thought this is a sharp contrast to what I was preaching 10 years ago about getting a brick thrown through your window. But it was more getting your stuff stolen. But you have the audiobook there from In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks.
As I've always said, the best form of home security is a Confederate flag. The stars and bars on the flagpole in front of the house lets everyone know that not only do you have guns, but you're probably cleaning them right now. So if you're a criminal casing the neighborhood, deciding which house will be your next home invasion target, which are you going to hit? The house with the Confederate flag or the one with the hummingbird feeder and the cat count sticker for the firefighters? If this feels too racist for you, the next best thing is the Don't Tread on Me flag. It's the same connotation. This is the home of a proud NRA member who's ready, willing, and able to fill your ass with buckshot if you do so much as step on the lawn.
Yeah, so I was thinking, wow, this is quite a contrast from 11 years ago when I was preaching. So, and it's also kind of a fundamental thing, which is I was preaching show of force. And this is a completely different posture, which is, oh, no, don't do anything to us. We're with you.
Yeah,
which
allied.
Which is a new, I would argue, possibly dangerous chapter in this
order. Can I split the difference?
Yes.
I've heard also, and this I would say maybe it leans a little bit, but in general, it's fairly down the middle. What you're supposed to do as an added security precaution at your house, big, giant, go to like a army surplus store or thrift store, get the biggest, giantest pair of work boots you can find and leave those out front on the stoop.
Oh, yeah. No, that's
big,
good.
Big dude who's not afraid to tussle. Yeah. A big guy who's not afraid to tussle lives here.
No, it's a good, that's a good call. Do the army surplus stuff. Because the army surplus stuff, the army boot is the exclusive boot of either the veteran or the insane person. There is no in between. It's strictly veterans or bizarre, insane, crazy people who wear the military surplus army boot. All right, we'll do the news in 1 second. Let me hit Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey over here. Perfect drink for your next virtual happy hour. Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. It's not your average flavored liqueur, no. It's made by a husband and wife duo. It's an American whiskey with peanut butter flavor. These guys are up in the San Diego area, I do believe is the story. They got together. They're bartenders working in the San Diego area, and they made their own product, and it is great. We have it. I can't wait to our next Christmas party. Finally, we can all get together, pull the mask down, and do a shot of Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Also, they are donating hand sanitizer to hospitals, police, firefighters, and more. So it's a good cause. Good for a cocktail, good for a shot, good for a drop in a coffee. It's Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Right, Dawson?
Screwball, the original most awarded peanut butter whiskey, is now available near you at 70 proof. Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey is the perfect shot or perfect addition to your favorite cocktail. Pick it up at your local store or get it delivered today. Ready to hashtag get screwed? Go to screwballwhiskey.com for more info. Enjoy responsibly. Advertisement by Screwball Spirits LLC, San Marcos, California. Whiskey with natural flavors and caramel color. 35% alcohol by volume.
All right.
Literally two of the greatest things on the planet, whiskey and peanut butter.
Yeah. I know.
The two best things.
Once I saw my 15th birthday, yes. all right, Gina, should we do some news?
Let's do it.
News with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Eat news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, I imagine this will be covered extensively on Reasonable Doubt, but since it's sort of new to us and breaking, we'll go ahead and mention it here. A grand jury indicted one of the three Louisville police officers who fired shots in the March 13th death of 26-year-old Breonna Taylor. Former officer Brett Hankison, who was fired from the department in June, is charged with three counts of first-degree wanton endangerment for blindly firing 10 shots into Taylor's apartment. None of his bullets struck Taylor, but they pierced the walls and entered a neighboring apartment. Officers Jonathan Mattingly and Miles Cosgrove, who shot and struck Taylor, were not charged. A couple bits of information. The announcement of the lone indictment immediately sparked demonstrations in Louisville. There's a curfew, as we read this, a 9 p.m. curfew in the city.
Why did they charge the guy who didn't hit Breonna Taylor versus the ones who did hit Breonna Taylor?
Like I said, I'm sure you guys are going to cover this, and I wish I had all the information, but specifically Brett Hankison, his shots fired into a completely separate apartment. And so that's what they call wanton endangerment. So it wasn't even part of the situation he was in.
A separate unit through the wall? Or he went into a separate unit?
Entered neighboring apartments.
Oh, my God.
Pierced the walls and entered neighboring apartments is what it says.
This is the guy who's firing blindly from outside.
Yeah, but he didn't go into another unit, or right. Did he?
No, it said it pierced the walls.
Yeah. His bullet. People have no idea. An interior wall on an apartment building is 2x4s, which are 1.5 by 3.5 Douglas fir. I mean, it's a kind of a soft wood, right? It's the size of a thickness, basically the gauge of like a pack of cigarettes standing up. It's a little more than that, but I mean, it's not much. Drywall on an older unit would be 1/2-inch drywall and or possibly 5/8-inch drywall, maybe maybe insulation, some bats of insulation.
Yeah.
A bullet wouldn't even slow down going through two pieces of drywall. It's literally a nothing burger. It doesn't. It would have no effect on the bullet. Maybe it would change its trajectory marginally, but if you just fired through a drywall, piece of drywall, just go right through the drywall.
You're not going to get a piece of drywall with a bullet stuck lodged in it.
If you were lucky,
a Derringer bullet.
Right.
Meanwhile, the studs, which could possibly slow down a bullet or even stop a bullet, perhaps, although not really if it was a decent caliber, those are spread out 16 inches apart, 16 on center, 14 and a half bay. So if you shot at a random wall, there'd be a very slight chance you would hit the side edge of a stud and be a much more likelihood that it would go through a bay. And the bay is half inch or 5/8 thick drywall, which is, gypsum. It's chalk, with paper over it. Maybe some R13 insulation bats, which is just fiberglass dog hair with paper on it. I mean, there's nothing inside that wall. That's when the guy gets pissed, when I would go stand out in the railing and my love would never approach me, I would go back into my apartment and you could punch right through. That's why guys punch holes in walls.
Right, because you can.
If you hit the stud, you break your hand.
Right.
If you hit a bay, you punch a hole in the wall.
Well, to answer your second question, and not a full answer, but as best as we can do right now, the other two officers, when you asked why weren't they charged, officers Mattingly and Cosgrove claimed they were fired on first by Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, and were returning fire. One of them, I think, got shot in the leg. There's another thing going down with the no-knock versus was it really a no-knock warrant? They weren't the same guys that asked for the warrant. So, there's definitely nuance and confusion here, but that's the overall breaking news.
Well, this is just a perfect shitstorm. It's them going in. It's their no-knock warrant. I don't know. My feeling is like, let's let people walk out in the morning and cuff them as they're walking out of the building. I don't see what the media... Look, obviously there are things I don't know, and maybe they would tell you why. But my feeling is if you think something no good is going on in that apartment and you have a warrant, then surveil the apartment, and in the morning, when the boyfriend gets up to go to work, you approach him and put some zip ties on him and ask him to sit on the curb while you walk into the apartment. That seems like the way to go. Then this is a perfect shitstorm. They go in with this warrant. It's dark, I'm guessing, and they get fired on. So how else? Now what's going to happen? Now they start firing. And the shit goes down. Lucky no one else in any of those separate apartment units were hit, all just laying in bed. Yeah. All those drive-by shootings, all those drive-bys where like the 7-year-old or the 2-year-old is killed
in a crib.
They're killed in the crib. It's because the bullet just goes right through the stucco. Yeah. I mean, stucco is at least something, but it goes right through the stucco or the siding or whatever it is, right through the drywall and right into the crib. That's it's amazing that no one else in any of these units was killed.
Well, last week, Taylor's family settled a civil wrongful death lawsuit with Louisville officials for $12 million. I know you said that with Garagos, that's an incredibly high number for something like this. If you're doing this on a general day-to-day basis, it's not going to be $12 million.
No, I mean, Garagos throws out insanely low numbers, like just some Mexican guy who was on his lawn and the LAPD just shot him dead on his own lawn. It's like, that's $350,000. I mean, it ain't half a million.
Well, because they're going for earning potential, right?
They do earning potential.
Lifelong earning potential.
Try to figure out how old the person is and how much they could earn. I don't know, Max Pat, did we ever pay out those two Mexican women who had or like Filipino
truck?
Who had the pickup truck and like they had a paper route? God bless them. It was like 5 a.m. and the LAPD was looking for Officer Dorden or whatever his name was. And they just fired blindly. And they must have put 80 rounds into this pickup truck. Remember that story?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. And I don't think either one of them was killed or maybe even hit. I don't know how that.
That's quite an indictment.
I was going to say, Jesus Christ. But also, I don't know if they ever got, they must have got paid something. I think they got a, three-year-old Tacoma, number one. They replaced their pickup truck. All right. Anyway, sad, but
You'll fill us in more, I'm assuming.
I will talk to Garagos about this, yes.
So the Ellen apology, I don't know if you're going to be super surprised to hear that the staffers thought it fell kind of flat. The big Ellen apology we talked about, and I have to say, I think I kind of applauded her
when they came off the stage.
That's right. Only the ones that were directly in front of her. I feel like I nailed the exact part of this apology that rubbed people the wrong way. So I feel pretty good about that. Monday, as we know, she returned and finally addressed the allegations of the toxic workplace. But current and former employees are criticizing the apology, claiming her monologue poked fun at their suffering. So yes, I'm sure we'll have a little bit of a problem with the language. The word trauma will be used, but in general, I think we'll get it. So remember when she said, you know, oh, how was everybody's summer? Oh, mine was great. Terrific. And then she said, let me give you some advice out there. Anyone's thinking of changing their title or giving yourself a nickname, don't go with the Be Kind Lady. Don't do it. That was the part that was highlighted. And that was the part that stuck with me, too, because it really did make it about her instead. And of course, the employees are saying she not only did she turn our trauma into a joke, but she somehow managed to make it about herself, which I think was pretty obvious. A current staffer claims that her apology was simply tactical. She's sharing it now because it's for premiere week and it's to get viewers back. And that just feels the opposite of what the message was supposed to be about.
Well,
more external than internal.
It's a really difficult thing to execute if you think about it. Christopher Dorner, by the way, was the officer, right? And the two women received $4.2 million. Not too shabby. Wow. for delivering newspapers. One of them was shot twice. I guess the other one was not hit. Eight officers put 107 rounds into the back of the pickup truck.
I know. Two non-kill shots is all they got?
I know. I mean, it's like I can picture R. Lee Ermey talking about in Full Metal Jacket about the guy who was up on the bell tower.
Charles Whitman.
Right.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
So here's the problem. There's a fundamental problem, which is, everyone you work with knows the kind of person you are. You know what I mean? This isn't good days and bad days. This isn't...
Some days I'm happy. Some days I'm impatient.
Yes. Every single workplace, when someone is delivering you bad news or telling you they've screwed something up or giving you... Or the worst is the miscommunication where they're giving you a version of what you wanted that is not the version you clearly asked for in your email or discussion. And then you get a little, oh, come on, just fix it, hurry, you know, and then you go, because when you do production, you're always on a clock, you know what I mean? So it kind of adds, when you add the clock, it's sort of like adding the clock is like adding booze to an argument. You know, it kind of supersizes it, you know,
right?
Because when you're doing, like when we would be doing the man show, it's like we're doing two shows on Friday. We're taping two shows. We're taping one at 3 and 1 at 5. And all of a sudden, it's this countdown all the time. And now you're looking at the guy from the art department and he's mocked up your goofball cereal box, you know, but it looks like shit. And you're like, I told you not to go with that. I told you I wanted to look like Count Chocula. This doesn't look like Count. And the clock's ticking. If you had a week, you wouldn't have that feeling. But you have 2 hours and it's sort of...
Right.
It sort of supersizes. It adds a little creatine to the situation. So production in general has a little ounce of hurry, urgency, which is basically the same effect a little booze gives to an argument. It just doesn't change the argument. It just kind of speeds it up a little, makes it a little bigger than it should be. But when Ellen creates an environment, and you can go do Leno's show and you can go do Letterman's show and you can feel the difference in the building. There's a different feeling of just it takes on the temperature and the flavor like a small business does. You know, when a small business takes on the sort of personality of the three employees or of the boss, the three employees sort of take on that. So Ellen is that person. But then Ellen had to do the problem is the person who's in charge with explaining what happened is the person who's being called a bitch. Really, what you need is just somebody who works there to come out and explain what kind of person Ellen is. And then Ellen's going to do the, I'm human, I have good days, I have bad days, I apologize. Sometimes I get frustrated, sometimes I get hurt. You know, this is all just pablum. It's just sort of the same. You're just describing, you're essentially describing Mother Teresa and Gandhi at that point. Like Mother Teresa, she has good days and she has bad days. And sometimes she gets her feelings hurt and sometimes she gets angry and sometimes she gets frustrated. And maybe sometimes she says shit. That would work with the best human being you've ever met in your life.
Right.
That's not really addressing what everyone is saying. Mm-hmm. And you also kind of have to, you have to do it where you always go, I always go, if people are just cooking this up, then where are all the stories about people who've worked with Henry Winkler over his 50 years in this city? How come?
What a diva.
Nay, I can't. People won't say boo about that guy other than the greatest guy ever. There's nothing. You can't. Phil Rosenthal or Jay Leno or Kimmel. No one will say anything. You want to know why? It doesn't exist. There's no, that environment doesn't exist.
Right. And I think now that we, you know, you've seen it and we have a couple days or whatever looking back, because maybe it was obvious at the beginning, maybe it wasn't. But doesn't it seem like that apology was 100% for the audience and 0% for the staff?
Yes.
It was, audience, please come back to me.
She doesn't care about her staff. She cares about her audience, obviously. Rightfully so. But
that's irreplaceable. Obviously.
Yes, that's how it works. It's still fine. Act however you want. And also, by the way, everyone, if your boss is a world class bitch, feel free to get a job somewhere else. You can leave. You don't have to hang out with this person that is upsetting or upsets you. Or is tyrannical or mean or whatever. You don't have to. I don't recommend people run their businesses that way. But if you got someone you don't like, I mean, I had a few construction jobs. I remember when I was doing earthquake rehab and I had a foreman named Jan. And Jan was my coworker for a long time. And then he moved on to another job and he became the foreman. And then I went on to that job, and all of a sudden, my coworker was now my superior, and Jan was a douche. I don't know why Jan turned into a douche. There's a picture of me and Jan Maxipata.
Okay.
There's a picture of me and Jan motorcycle riding in the desert, like smoking a cigar and like making a face at each other that I sort of recalls in the computer somewhere. Anyway, I went to the guy's wedding and everything, but somehow he became a douche when he became my foreman. And I was working earthquake rehab, which meant instead of $12 or $13 an hour as a carpenter, I was getting $19 an hour, which was a big deal for me in 1987. It was a big deal making 19 bucks. I mean, I thought I was rich making 19 bucks an hour. And Jan was a douche. And he rode me, and he kind of rode me some more. And at a certain point, I went, fuck it. I'm out of here. Like, I don't care if I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life. Jan is being a douche to me, and I'm getting on with my life. I'm going back to 13 bucks an hour. I just left.
And then you waited by the railing.
I stood by the railing.
Or the best, you open your car door, and you just see a hand come to the door and shut it.
Push it shut. It was Jan's hand. I went to the parapet of the building on top of the roof where we're resheathing the roof and putting in parapet braces. And I just leaned over the top of the parapet and I just longingly looked out into the city. Right. And at some point, I felt a hand on my shoulder. That man was Jan. He explained to me that he'd done wrong.
Yeah. And that he's hard on you because he believes in you.
Yeah. All I remember from Jan is he was a Swedish guy. Looked very Swedish. Got along with him fine until he became the foreman and rode me out of town. But I did go to his wedding. And Jan was the kind of guy, construction guys are like, they're the kind of guys who, like, while you're down doing baseboard on one knee, they'll just walk upright and they'll palm the back of your head and fart into your head. You know what I mean? Like, these guys are insane. These construction guys are insane people. And Jan was this crazy, big Swedish guy who's always farting on people's heads and, you know, blowing cigar smoke into their face. And it was insane.
That's a hostile work environment.
Yeah, but that's how it went. Everyone did that to everyone. I didn't think anything of it. But I went to his wedding. And in the wedding, during the wedding, you know, Big Jan was like stuffed into a tuxedo that he'd rented. We'd never seen it. You know, you never see these guys wearing a suit or with their hair combed or ever looking serious at all. And there he was, you know, with the candles lit, looking down at his miniature sized bride and everything. And at some point, like the old man who was like the old man from Benny Hill, he like came out. And he was the cantor, you know, and he was starting to sing Sunrise, Sunset. It's like, sunrise, sunset. It's like 80-year-old guy.
Is this a Jewish wedding?
I guess. I guess his wife may have been Jewish.
Okay.
Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. And at some point, he did the, is this the little girl?
Huh, oh, yeah.
And then when he turned to big fat Jan and went, is this the little boy? Huh? And I'm just picturing him farting on people's heads and chugging beers and shotgunning beers and stuff. I couldn't contain myself. I started laughing. We all started laughing because he was being sung to, like, is this the little boy?
Right. Yeah. I don't remember growing older. When did they?
Right. And everybody got the giggles. And we couldn't. Miami Vice? Oh, Hammer. Jan. Yeah, this is Jan Zetterberg. Or something like that.
Maybe he was Jewish.
It's in one of the books, I think. There's a picture of us like smoking cigars, camping. We'd go motorcycle riding and stuff like that. But yeah, if you're bought, I liked Jan, but he was being a douche to me for like 2 weeks. And eventually I just said, F it.
Enough.
Packed it in. Left the highest paying job I had for the next 9 years, probably. All right, Gina, one more. What do you got?
All right. Well, a great follow-up to a story that I really thought was going to go nowhere. A while back, remember we kind of tittered about Tom Cruise possibly going to space to shoot a movie? And we thought, okay, that's cute. That'll never happen. Well, Tom Cruise will be launched into space October 2021. The actor has just given a launch date to blast off to the International Space Station where he'll film a movie. Tom and director Doug Liman will ride on a SpaceX Crew Dragon rocket and capsule to the space station next year to make an action adventure flick.
Is this the sequel to Live, Die, Repeat, The Edge of Tomorrow?
TMZ says the film, which will become the first shot in outer space, is not a Mission Impossible flick, but that's all we know.
Hmm.
Same directing acting team behind Edge of Tomorrow.
Interesting.
Could be a sequel.
Underrated.
Love that movie.
Well, look, what did we say the other day? They were sending, what was it? Estee Lauder, what was it? They're sending another product to space for an ad campaign. So it's, you know, floating perfume. Now Tom's going. So this is going to become normal-ish.
Mm. I wonder if this is going to be one of those things that we will either experience in our lifetime or not. You know, like my family with Central Air, like it will exist for 40 years, but they'll never experience it. Mm-hmm. Are we going to be that way with space travel? Are we going to space? Is this thing, you know, look, 10 years from now, it could be fairly ubiquitous and not ubiquitous, but obtainable.
Yes.
Obtainable. If somebody could afford a nice Hawaiian vacation or could afford the purchase of an RV or a second summer home, then maybe 10 or 15 years now, or years from now, this would be affordable for that group.
Right. And that's don't people already have tickets purchased for something that isn't even built yet? Like there are tickets that have been sold for this, you know, for going into space.
I think like one of the Backstreet Boys or one of those boy bands. Is there some story about one of the boy band guys having a ticket to one of these?
Lance Bass.
Yeah, it's how AJ McLean celebrated his victory on the Stars.
You know, yes. I know somebody.
Lance Bass, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, Lance had a ticket to space.
How gay of you.
I know somebody who has one. If we ever want to talk to them, I know somebody with one of the tickets. He does very well, and his family does very well. And I remember when he posted on Facebook, and I reached out to him at the time saying, we might want to talk to you. So yeah, there is somebody we could talk to.
I would like to buy a ticket on the second shuttle going to outer space. The first one, I'd like them to kind of work the bugs out on.
Yeah, you know what
I
mean?
I wonder if it's got a railing and a viewing port where I can just go lean against the railing waiting for Lance Bass to come up to me.
Put your hand on the shoulder.
So, Max, Matt, I guess all those pictures in the computer, I don't know how they work. I think it was in my book.
Yeah, I'm searching through your book, too. And I'm not finding it.
Which book are you looking through?
I looked through the first four.
Oh,
so
that's where it would be. I think it would probably be in not Taco Bell material. Maybe
I'll hit up Lynch. Too,
it's probably. Don't we have a file of computer pictures? Oh, we're looking at Lance Bass.
Baby Lance.
Don't we have a file that just has computer pictures in it?
We do, but yeah, not I know there. All the pictures on that computer, and that one doesn't even seem familiar to me. So I gotta,
Oh no. Mm.
What
now could be in there?
Oh, because I am saying that I don't know what you're talking about.
You put a pox on it by saying that.
Doesn't seem familiar to
you. It doesn't ring familiar.
No, I would scan through there. What picture are you looking for?
I'm looking for you and Jan motoring along with your motorcycles.
No, we're not with our motor. No. This is about we're smoking cigars and we're standing. We're not on motorcycles or anything.
Okay.
We were motorcycle riding, but it's a picture of us just standing there face to face with cigars hanging out of our mouths.
Okay, let me try to find
do
out.
That. See, this is the difficulty. All right, let me hit Simply Safe, and then we'll bring Cesario on, talk a little sports. Most home security companies trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, lousy customer support. There's only one that's a no-brainer. That is Simply Safe. Everything to protect your home, an arsenal, sensors, cameras for every room, window, and door, tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring day and night, ready to send police, fire, or medical professionals. Set up in under an hour, just peel and stick. No technician required. No contract, pushy sales guys, hidden fees, or fine print. Starts at just $15 a month. U.S. News and World Report named it the best overall home security of 2020. The batteries last up to 10 years. No muss, no fuss. Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Head to simplysafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's simplysafe.com/Adam to make sure they know our show sent you.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Max Pan is looking for that picture.
I'm looking, and I'm still standing by. I don't know what you're talking about. It's hard for me to...
Well, if you see a picture of me smoking a cigar when I was 22.
I'll put that up.
I like that Dawson swapped out the cigar for a cigarette. I like cigarettes.
Maybe just like RGB.
Maybe.
I heard cigarettes instead of cigars.
Well, no cigar. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Cesario on the sports right after this.
It's time to break down the game film and look at the X's and O's, the KOs and the O-Nos from the world of sports. BetOnline presents All Balls, All Sports.
We start with some sad news. Former Bears great Gale Sayers passes away at 77, victim of dementia, which contributed to his death. Sayers, one of the best running backs ever, came out of Kansas. Inducted into the Hall of Fame at 34, which is the youngest player ever to do that. His career essentially cut short to 5 years by knee injuries. He survived a right knee injury, came back and led the league in 69. And, you know, that's like back when surgery was performed by dentists. So I don't know how he did that. And barely played in 70 and 71. So essentially 5 year career, all pro five times, averaged 5 yards a carry. 30 yards he averaged per kickoff return and almost 15 yards per punt. So amazing dude. Also known, of course, for his role in the life of Brian Piccolo, passed away from cancer in his prime. And they made the TV movie Brian's Song, starring James Caan as Piccolo and Billy Dee Williams as Sayers. This is a great from, I guess, what's becoming another generation, but I can still see him fresh in my mind and better than any running back I think I've ever seen.
He was very smooth. He had a couple things I remember. He would always say, I think his famous thing from the NFL films is like, I just need 8 inches of daylight or some
18, yeah.
Is it 18 inches of daylight? Or squirt through, it's all I need. Also, I think against the 49ers, famous sort of mud bowl game where he just ran back kickoffs to the house, ran, got, you know, maybe 150 or 200 yards rushing, but took a few to the house on kickoff return and maybe punt return. It's sort of crazy game where everyone was slipping and sliding everywhere because it was like this rainstorm, and he could do it. He could somehow run through the mud while everyone else was sliding everywhere and get traction, which is an interesting thought. I'm now going to bounce this off of you guys. Race car drivers have to sort of feel, have to sort of, like Niki Lauda said, like, I don't have a very good brain, but I have a good butt, and I can feel things in my butt. I can feel when the car's wrong. I can feel when the car's starting to get loose. The whole thing about race car driving is, when is that point where the car breaks loose? Because that's what it is. You have to get right to that point, but don't go past that point. But if you go under that point, then you're not competitive. So the great drivers somehow can feel where that point is, where you're going around a corner. You're trying to go as fast as you can possibly go around that corner, but you can't just go flat with your accelerator pedal. You can't just plow through the corner. You go right out the other side of the corner. You'll spin out. You'll go all over the place. What is that feeling? It's innate. It's like balance. It's like a kind of a balance. And so you take a guy like Senna. They said Ayrton Senna. They said, oh, he was faster than everybody in the rain. But because now it's that feeling, and you've just heightened it. Now it's even more acute because the rain makes it even more difficult to find where that edge is. The rain kind of blurs that edge. Like, you don't know how much rain is on that corner, how dry it is, like what the line is. So the greats, like the Ayrton Senna, he was super fast in the rain, which just meant he was more skilled and had more feeling and more. You picturing driving a 700 horsepower car through the rain, and how easily you could just slide off the track if you didn't keep it right at that edge. Yes, Brian.
Well, if you have that it that like Senna had, you know what I mean, for example, or whoever else, the rain actually benefits you because you're the same, right? You still feel it that way, but everyone else's lack of it exacerbates the difference between you and them. It separates you from the pack.
Right, and Gail Sayers was such a finesse, nuanced, kind of balanced runner, not a Earl Campbell type, but just such a poetry in motion kind of guy, that famous game, I guess it was San Francisco they were playing, was a mud ball, and he was just running past everyone because, like Senna, that extra ability he had was enhanced by the slippery conditions. What, put in Gail Sayers mud ball game or something and see if also check out Hall of Fame kicker Jan Stenerud, by the way, as we're looking up Jan's.
I
think it was in San Francisco. It was a mud bowl and everyone was having trouble keeping up with him. He looked like he was running like the field was dry. Everyone else was running like the field was what it was, like super slippery. And think about running on something that's super slippery. You need that super extra balance and ability, right, to not slide out. What was that game? 49ers, I think. Gail Sayers, San Francisco 49ers, Mud Bowl or whatever. You can just see him running in a way that made it possible for him to run on that slick, muddied field. But anyway, go ahead, Jeff.
Well, as brilliant, as instinctual, as in grasp of affinity as that is, as a 13-year-old Packers fan, all I remember is going, no, not again. He would do it every single time against the Packers. He was just amazing. And you couldn't get angry. You could get angry at Fran Tarkenton. When I was a kid watching Packers play Minnesota, you would just go, oh, please, just kill him. Just shoot him. That can't be legal with Fran Tarkenton. But with Sayers, you just sat in amazement and just watched him beat the Packers and then go, what are you going to say? He's even back then, I said, this may be the best running back I ever see in my life. He was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I always wanted my Rams to smash Sir Francis of Tarkington, as Howard Cosell called him, because at some point he would disrespectfully turn his back to the defense when he was scrambling. Like, he would literally disrespect the defense. He was one of the few guys who scrambled who would turn his back to the defense while he was scrambling. You don't see that these days, people turning their back on the defense, but they would turn their back on the defense. Max Pata, what was that?
So, well, he had the famous 6-touchdown game, and the pictures that I see look very, very muddy against the 49ers.
Yeah, that's what I'm finding, too. So you
can... Everything looked right for Deion Sanders. The 49ers were slipping, the rest of the Bears were slipping, but Deion just walked through everybody.
Sayers recorded one of the NFL's finest single-game performances.
I said Mud Bowl 49ers. This isn't... Oh, yeah.
It's a...
Yeah, no, this is... This is what
it's
I'm talking
about. It's not referred
to
as the Mud Bowl.
No, I... Okay. It's they're playing the 49ers. The field's covered with mud.
And that's what I found.
So. Okay. Well, there you go.
All right.
That's it. He was good, but he didn't have four of those games under his belt. That's that one. But he takes a kickoff back to the house. And if you show him taking a kickoff or maybe a punt to the house, you can see him running through this field that everyone else is trying to navigate. And he's just skating past it like a water bug.
Yeah, just thinking to yourself, watching those kinds of kickers, you're thinking, if you're the fan of the Bears opponent, you're just thinking, God, no, please no, please no, please no, don't kick it to Sayers, please no. And he would eventually just break your heart. He was that good. Only 5 years. That's amazing.
I know.
5 years. Hall of Famer in 5 years.
It's always amazing how often the decree goes down, don't kick it to this guy, and how many times he receives the kick. Like, it seems pretty easy. See, we can just see him, and it's like everyone else is sliding and flopping and sliding, and he's just cutting.
Yeah.
It's all balance. He's not wearing special cleats. It's just other guys. No. He's Senna in the rain.
Yeah.
All right.
Four touchdown runs, one touchdown catch, and a punt return touchdown.
He'll be missed.
Oof.
All right.
Badass.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's keep it in the NFL. How did Chargers rookie Justin Herbert get his first NFL start at quarterback ever? Well, starting quarterback Tyrod Taylor's lung was punctured by a team doctor before the Chiefs game, trying to give Taylor a painkiller for cracked ribs.
Wow.
Yeah. So the doctor has the starting quarterback on the table who's complaining of cracked ribs, or probably just wailing at the pain of cracked ribs. He's about to give him a shot of whatever the hell they give him nowadays. And he hits his lung and punctures it.
Well, where
I've never heard of that.
I haven't either. But so where are we at with Tyrod and is it Hebert?
Herbert.
Oh, that doctor did the Chargers a favor. Gary, I know you're here. I know you can chime in. Man, that doctor knew it was best for the team.
Listen, Dr. Herbert's been the team doctor for nearly 9 months now. And no, so, sure. All right. Herbert looked good. Yep. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor is a kind of a journeyman, but Herbert looked good. And he was really just a beat away from beating the Super Bowl champions. I mean, he really could have won that game. And I don't know if Tyrod is coming back. On the other hand, they used to say, although I don't think it works anymore, they used to go, nobody loses their job to an injury. That used to be the thing. But they used to say the Golden Globes basically dictate the Oscars, or the Squid can pick out the Super Bowl winner. And once we announce these things, it all ended, you know. But so this guy gets his lung punctured by team doctor, and he's going to have to give up his starting position? Or who's starting this week? And what do we think of the injury? Yes, Brian.
Tyrod can't play this week. He's already been ruled out.
Okay.
They think it's going to be a multi-week injury. Let's not forget, and this will be off the top of my head, so forgive me for getting a detail or two wrong. In 2001, a above-average quarterback named Drew Bledsoe went out of the second game of the season with a sheared blood vessel against, I believe, the Jets.
Jets.
He got hit out of the sidelines.
I think it was Cox who hit him.
It might have been so the Jets make sense. Yeah. So he ended up getting a sheared blood vessel. It was much worse than they thought. He was out for 6 weeks or whatever. And in comes a young man named Tom Brady, who turns out to be playing pretty well. And yeah, out the window goes the, you know, can't lose your job due to an injury. It's like, oh, you, the guy played a lot better than you.
Yeah. Chargers coach said that he's not going to lose his job when he's healthy. He's going to be the starter, but then he'll pull him after one session in the first half, in the first quarter, and then he'll put in Herbert, who is the future. I mean, that guy looked composed. He's big as an ox, and he looked good. And
he plays.
You know, the best team in football, at least top two or three, is the Chiefs, and he was pretty much winning that entire game. Miraculous ending.
So a possible another question for Garagos. What are we talking here with malpractice or suing, you know, or the union getting involved, or what are we talking?
Yeah.
How about MVP? Team doctor's MVP, isn't he?
Well, there definitely seems like a lawsuit, because even if you come back in 4 weeks and then have a subpar first quarter and you get yanked, you can go, yeah, that's because I was recovering for three and a half weeks.
Punctured.
My lung was punctured. Yeah.
Fun fact, I did see, I forget, maybe Adam Schefter, maybe some expert, NFL expert, say as part of the CBA, players cannot sue over medical procedures or whatever they accept, they willfully accept. So obviously Tyrod Taylor was like, yeah, give me the shot.
Oh,
so
no.
It would seem his options are very limited. Maybe his family could say, I don't know, you have to ask Garagos, but that's what I read today.
Interesting. All right, let me hit Bet Online here. The wait is finally over, and you know football season, as we've been talking about, is up and running. You want to get in on some of this action? Bills and Rams, that's a good game. Texas Steelers and Texans and Steelers. Packers and Saints, Vikings, Titans, Buccaneers and Broncos, and the game I'm looking forward to is Raiders and Patriots. I think that's going to be a hell of a game. More options to wager than anywhere online, from spreads and totals to props. You get in on season opening bonuses, wager on wins and division championship futures. Just head to BetOnline. Do it today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner at Podcast One. And don't forget promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. All right. You want to bring it home, Jeff?
You got it. This is Jeff Cesario, and that is all for All Balls, All Sports.
All Balls, All Sports. Presented by Bet Online, your online sportsbook expert.
All right, take a quick break, come back, do a one-on-one with Bill O'Reilly right after this.